Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
And today we're going to talk about raising naturally healthy livestock on a homestead, or in other words,
if you have livestock, you have dead stock.
Oh, and this is not Woodstock, let me tell you. So now, Annie, you're the farmer. You're the farmer. And every day doing your chores and going up and dealing with your sociopathic goats and your chickens.
Wait a minute. You left out the pigs.
The pigs. Well, the pigs I'm okay with because they don't really bother me. But anyway, so what's your philosophy on livestock? What is your overall philosophy on livestock?
My overall philosophy is that as the farmer, I have a job to do, and my main job, my main task is to safely and humanely make a way for animals to do their job. If I do my job well, then I can step out of the way and they can do their job. And everything has to have a job. I like to say even the dog, the cutest dog ever, his job is to be a darling, and he does it well, be cute. But everybody else really has a job. And I need to know that, and I need to know what that job is, and then I need to help that animal do a good job.
Well, and I should point out that Blue Rock Station is not a farm in the traditional sense, in that we do not raise crops for sale, but it's more of a homestead-type situation. And I think many of the people listening have this fantasy of living on a homestead and raising what they need and raising their own food, their own livestock. And I know you've settled in on raising goats and chickens and now pigs and, of course, a couple of peacocks.
But I just want to say I'm not raising them to be a meal. So that's part of my philosophy, is I want to demonstrate that they have jobs to do. And while at the end, like if you have too many roosters, you don't really have a choice about where that's all going to end. And pigs get too fat, and you don't have a choice where that's going to end. But for the most part, I'm not raising them to be a meal.
Okay, but that's your philosophy. There are going to be people. I hate to break this to you, but they're going to be raising them to butcher them. I mean, that
I
is going
it.
To
I don't
be
want to
their
hear
intention.
About it. I know it.
Even the goats, you know. So this is the reality of being an omnivore.
But I'm not an omnivore.
I know
so it's
you're
okay.
not. So you still get to wear that pure as the driven snow medal. And the goats
button.
Appreciate it.
I need
because,
a button. You need to make me a button.
All right. And so, but if you if you are raising these animals on a homestead, what led to the selection, or what would lead you to the selection of, say, for instance, goats over cattle, pigs or
well,
chickens?
Well, sustainability. I mean, a goat is much better on the land than a cow, or if you're raising for beef, it's a much leaner meat. It's just a much more efficient animal. Also, they aren't naturally going to eat pasture, so they can eat a lot of things that you want rid of, like poison ivy and honeysuckle and, you know,
so you're
brambles.
Saying like a goat is a browser more than a
they're,
grazer.
They're a forager. Mm-hmm. So cattle are browsers, but they're foragers. They eat a little of this and a little of that. And they're very efficient in how they utilize the material that they eat. They have four stomachs. So they have a lot of potential for making money. You can sell hides, you can sell bones, you can sell manure, you can sell their kids, you can sell them as a milk goat, you can sell their products, you can have a herd share and sell their milk, you can make cheese if you are able to be inspected. So they are really an efficient animal. And as a woman, they are really great because I can make them do what I need them to do, and they step on me and it might hurt, but they don't break my leg or my foot. Also, the milk that they produce and the products that come from that milk are incredibly healthy. They're slightly higher in fat content, but that animal naturally homogenizes the milk, so the fat is mixed in, and they're just great. So I went to a talk that OFA, the Ohio Education and Farm Association organization put on a few years ago that Weston A. Price Foundation gave. And I realized when I was sitting there that I could raise goats and produce milk with those goats, and this would provide some health for my family. And that's how I got started. I bought milk, raw milk, illegally for a while, and we tried it out.
And you're admitting it on the air?
I say, come and get me, boys.
Oh, I tell you.
So I did buy it illegally, and I drove 1 hour one way to get it.
To your connection.
That's right, to my connection, my underground connection.
Uh-huh. Well, and we should point out that in Ohio, the land of the free, that it is illegal to sell unpasteurized milk. You can harvest it, I guess, milk a goat for your own use, but it's
harvest. That's a terrible. Don't say that.
All right,
it's funny, can have your own milk, but in Virginia they're trying to pass a law that says you're not allowed to consume your own raw milk. So this is crazy. Anyway, just to say the rest of that is that we decided we would get goats, and I bought the first goat from the woman that. That sold me the milk.
From your dealer.
From my dealer, yes, from my milk dealer. And I bought her babies with her. Eleanor Rigby came to live with us, and that was the start of a really great adventure. And then since then, I've raised lots and lots of goats and sold them as milk goats for individual families or for work with kids, all kinds of things that those goats have been sent to do. And I have pigs because we have some challenges with parasites. So the pigs root up. We move them around, rotate them from different pastures, so they root up the pasture and disrupt the parasite table. They have cleaned out our pond for us, which doesn't really hold water, but it has less debris in it now. They've eaten a big area of forest that's in front of the house that we wanted to have all the saplings and everything out of. And then at the end of about 19 or 20 months, we have sold them and provide meat to people that would not necessarily have access to really good meat. And then we start over.
And the other thing on the farm, the other livestock essentially, is chickens.
Right, the chickens. And the chickens provide eggs, which we sell and also some people consume. And that's a great, 99.9% protein if people want to consume eggs. And they also provide lots of poop.
Well, and I think it was interesting, again, to me, not being raised on a farm, to see just what a different kind of food product an egg from a chicken that's raised the way that they're raised at Blue Rock Station, that run free, they eat grass, they eat bugs, they forage
for garden.
Their meals, they eat the garden, they come in and scratch up whatever you've just planted. And it's a completely different food than the egg that you buy in the store.
Well, it's not even the same color.
Yeah, and it doesn't have the same nutrients or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's amazing. If you haven't experienced that, and don't be fooled with the idea of pastured
It'll
eggs.
It'll say cage-free.
Yeah, because essentially
it's not really true.
It just means that they were exposed to an environment that was not a cage for a brief period of time sometime
right.
during their life. So the bottom line is with this kind of material, with any food, you really have to buy it from someone you know. Otherwise, all the labels in the world don't really help you out on that.
Yeah.
So that's something when we talk about, when people say, what is the secret of sustainability or how can I live a sustainable life? We often will say, well, you don't have to live in an earthship or a house made of tires. Just buy food from people you know and eat your meals with people you love. That is the heart of sustainability.
It's the truth.
There you go. So we've got these happy, healthy critters that get massaged with beer twice a day.
No, they get massaged with coconut oil.
Oh, coconut oil.
So let me talk about how I deal with various health issues. So my first line of defense is really medicinal herbs. And you know, whether it's a lack of copper, because copper and selenium are very depleted in North America, and it causes a lot of problems for goats in particular. So whether it's that or it's a parasite, and parasites are a big problem in this area too, I'm going to try – my first line of defense is going to be herbal remedies. And then only if I have nothing else, I've used everything that I know in all my toolkit of healing, and that's important. I'm going for healing. I'm not just going for killing off or stopping whatever's going on. Then I'm going to go for the big guns, which is pharmaceuticals. But one thing I do recommend and has helped me a lot is online, there's an awful lot of resources, and on Facebook, there's a couple of really good pages you can sign up and go to. And one is called Goat Emergency Help and General Questions, and also Successfully Goating with Rosie. Those are a couple of places where you can go and put in things in. And say, this is what's going on, and here's a picture, and people will try to help you. And sometimes their advice really is not good, but most of the time somebody's going to give you something that makes sense. I also highly suggest, if you are thinking about having animals as a livestock production in a farm or on a homestead, that you are prepared, that you don't just go someplace and, you know, knee jerk, it's a cute little thing, let's bring it home. And that requires knowing what it is that you need. And so while I'm happy to provide consulting, and I do often do that, you can go online to the SPCA Farm Animal Welfare Certification Program, or you can go to a group called Farm Animal Concern Trust online. All of these things are based on science and animal care guidelines that are based on science and are focused on animal husbandry in the food industry. And then one other that I really like is Animal Welfare Approved Certified Humane. Those are all places you can go to find out information about how to do things in a more humane way. So it's important to be ready for emergencies. And this is where the problem comes in. When you look online, you see a lot of people that are well-meaning, but as my grandma would say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Oh, she made that up.
She didn't make it up, but she did say it often. Mm-hmm. And it's a good line to know, because it helps you to understand a lot of the motivation of people sometimes. But it's often in the goat world and also other livestock world, it's often the problem. So people have good intentions. They don't mean to do bad things or hurtful things, but their own ignorance, their own inept abilities in the farming world create bad things for farmers. So I just want to say something about the problem we have with the fact that we don't have vets. Vets really want to – they want to earn back money that they've spent on their education. And so in the countryside, it's very hard to have a vet. And also, vets don't know about goats.
Okay, you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. Reminding you, as always, that it is the end of the world as we know it. And thank God. So, and of course, it is definitely the end of the world for some of these animals. We're talking about raising livestock on a homestead. And I know when we were first getting into the idea of raising farm animals, I think we had an illusion. You were talking about how many people get involved with raising animals and they're simply unprepared for the whole experience. They don't have the right fencing, the right facilities for the animals. They don't have the knowledge to keep them healthy and happy. And I think one of the areas where we were unprepared, or at least naive, is the idea that these animals are going to die, you know, and as you were saying, if you have livestock, you have dead stock. And especially in the area of raising milk goats, in order to keep the goats fresh and providing milk, they have to be pregnant. I know you do that every other year. Most people would have them pregnant each year. And now suddenly you have an exponentially growing herd. And you've got to deal with genetic inbreeding, so you've got to introduce animals from the outside. So what are some of the big challenges you've run into with the fact that you cannot have an infinite number of animals on the farm, much as you would like to have.
No, I wouldn't like. I don't want any more work.
Right. And that they do die. I mean, they die of illnesses. They die of natural causes. They die of predators. They die of old age.
Well, one of the challenges, if you're not raising animals to butcher them, is you are going to run into this lifetime of different diseases or sicknesses or old age and how that animal deals with old age.
And you mentioned about the butchering. I think you're alluding to the fact that most modern farms, they just kill the animals before they have time to get sick.
Yeah, as they age. So, and aging really does, just like in humans, produce other conditions for that animal. I never thought about the fact, because I've had dogs for a long time and then they would get old and die, or a cat that gets old and dies, and it's never easy. Again, it's really educating yourself about what that animal is like and what it needs to be healthy. One of the things that I think I was really naive about was the fact that an animal brought in from another place brings disease sometimes. In the early days, we would rent a buck, and the person would bring the buck, or we would take the buck to the, we did take the buck one time, I'm sorry, took the doe one time to a buck, and we were really horrified. They had like abandoned cars, and the goats could get on the cars, and we're like, we don't want to leave the goat, we're going to stay here with her until she's bred. And but anyway, so then we rented bucks, and I don't think we ever had any problem with that. But then one year there was a problem with parasites that year, and lots of bucks died. And I didn't have a buck, and I couldn't get a buck to rent, so I went to something I never would have done, and I went to the auction, and I bought a buck. And he brought me disease. And that disease has continued. He brought me a parasite that has continued to challenge the herd and me along with it. And granted, I have learned a lot about life and death and how to keep things alive. I would like to have not learned any of this. So it just never occurred to me. You know, he was young and he was healthy looking. And another time I really was naive. I brought does in and they didn't work out because they didn't get along with the herd. And I sent them away before they could do too much damage, but they had something wrong as well. And so, again, it's really about you. When you're raising livestock, you can never know enough. And particularly with goats, because we don't have the availability of having, at least for me, having a veterinarian that is knowledgeable about goats. And I do get people writing and calling me because I wrote a book, Naturally Healthy Goats Reference Guide, and asking me about different things that are problems or challenges with their goats. And they too, I find this across the country, that there just isn't a very good knowledge base in veterinarians. And I went to the OSU Veterinary School for a little class, and I asked a lot of questions about this, and they showed me a map of Ohio and where the cattle are, where the cows are, where the pigs are. And it's just totally black. And they were showing me that because they wanted me to understand that their donors are supporting cattle, cows, and pigs. And so that's what they're studying.
So I know when you were doing a lot of research for the Naturally Healthy Goat book, one of the things that becomes apparent with goats specifically is the typical vet response is the goat is sick, let it die or kill it. That is,
well, that's especially true, as, you know, if you read a lot of, I've read like maybe 50 goat books, and many of those goat books will say if your goat kids and she has a buck, and that buck isn't going to be used for breeding, which of course you want him to be pretty good as far as his conformation, but you can't always know that until he's older, you should just have a bucket of water and drown him. And this is the attitude that a lot of people have about livestock. I don't see them as my pets, but I have respect for their life and the fact that they have something to contribute. And my job is to see how, now that they're here, how can that animal have a job so that it can live a long, healthy life?
Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned about the challenges with raising livestock being depleted soil. Depleted soil is always an issue, which leads to then the second one, which is parasites.
Well, that's some of it. It leads to other things because there's a less mineral content in the body. So with goats in particular, or even with pigs, copper and selenium depletion. And so you'll see aborted fetus, you'll see miscarriage, you'll see lack of release of placenta. You'll see they're losing hair because of the copper problem. And you'll see them die.
And how can you deal with that? How can you address that?
Well, again, it's just really some pretty basic knowledge. For one, to know that if you're going to give copper, which you probably need to do several times a year, you've got to give iron with it or they can't absorb the copper. The same with selenium. Like when I have goats that are going to kid, the month before they kid, I give a good dose of selenium, but you have to give A and D oil with the selenium in order for them to absorb it. And you might not know they're low in selenium. You just can assume that because the soil's so depleted. But copper's a big one. You can also feed red raspberry leaves and canes to goats. They're high in copper and selenium, so those two work together, and they can absorb it that way. You can buy copper that's in little pencil leads that are in capsules, and you give that to them, and they have a rumen that will hang on to those copper pieces and release the copper over a period of time so that it really does help the animal.
Now, the area of parasites is one I know you struggle with quite a lot. And traditionally, the way farmers have dealt with it is they get out their, ivermectin or?
Well, different chemicals. They'll use different chemicals. But part of the challenge right now is that those parasites, just like fleas, have developed an ability to morph into,
superbugs.
Yep,
right?
Superbugs. And there are a lot of superbugs for livestock right now. So where we are with chemicals, if we can't get the herbal remedies to create balance, because every goat needs to have some parasite activity, but balance in everything. This is what we're trying to achieve in our own lives and in our own health and also with goats. So that balance has to be somewhere, well, it's got to be there or they're going to be sick. And so what we're going to do is to give two different pharmaceuticals at the same time from different categories, and we're going to triple the dose that's required. And if we don't do it, they're going to die because that's what it happened. The other challenge, though, is to get that pasture so it's really lush and tall. And that animal is eating at its shoulder level because those parasites that are really deadly only live on grass blades and they only live on the first 2 or 3 inches. So that's why we talk a lot about pasture rotation and the ability to have that pasture have lots of good microbes and the plants be nutrient, dense and really good for that animal versus just any old thing.
And I know that, for instance, some animals are much more susceptible. You mentioned how goats are very susceptible to parasites. But we had llamas for a while, and llamas, of course, not being native to North America, were susceptible to some very specific parasites. The meningal worm was the one that constantly battling, and where a goat might get the same parasite
they can die from that too, but it's not as common.
Well, the llamas would attack their nervous system,
right,
and actually leave them paralyzed.
And then it attacks the brain, and then they die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And another area, of course, that folks are going to have to deal with is predators.
Yeah.
And we feel a little, at least I do. I mean, I feel like, okay, if a hawk comes down and takes a chicken, that's kind of natural, kind of cool,
I mean, it's not cool.
I know,
the poor
it's not
thing
cool.
is terrified.
It's not cool for the chicken, but it's
no.
cool for the hawk. It's a lot different than if your neighbor's dog comes over, because that feels unnatural. I mean, if we're out here trying to, drink our herbal tea and burn incense and frolic in nature, a hawk killing one of your chickens just sort of seems okay.
It's a good thing I'm the farmer. That's
yeah,
all I'm
yeah,
going to
yeah, yeah.
say.
But on the other hand, a weasel No, that's
really
or
bad.
A raccoon. Those guys are little nasty.
That's nasty.
Oh, they're
it's all nasty, Jay. It's just really all nasty. So let me say a couple things about predators. The animals you're talking about, chickens and goats, their whole life is based on the fact that they know they are sought after. They know they are the hunted. And so everything,
if you're a chicken, everything wants to kill
well,
you.
Well, that's true. Anything you can imagine, including human beings. So that's the challenge. And all of their defenses are based on the fact that every day of their life, they know every minute they could potentially be hunted down and killed. So as a farmer, my job is to try to make sure that I've created an environment that tries to think ahead how that can be prevented. And it can't always be prevented. For example, with chickens, you know, ours are free range. We have a big chicken tractor that hasn't gotten finished, and that's the idea that we would move around chickens as a pasture rotation. And that might be helpful, but that chicken tractor can be dug under and a predator can get them in a heartbeat. I didn't lose my male peafowl. My peacock was killed brutally by a raccoon, and I'm still devastated by it. And so we caught the raccoon. We have traps. So just to move on to how we deal with it, we have some traps. There's no way to catch a weasel. You'd have to poison it, and that puts too much risk at the other animals like the cats and things. So we wouldn't do that. We just got to move the chickens to a different location where the weasel has gotten into. But as far as raccoons and possums, I really don't like to kill a possum. But one time we did have one that got into the chicken house and it did kill hens, and so we did kill it. But mostly we don't kill them. We just turn them loose. But the raccoons, we will always shoot them because they will just keep coming back.
Well, it's illegal to live trap them and then move them to another location.
Right, and it's cruel because that location already has plenty of those animals, and so you're just really sentencing them to a cruel death.
So one of the ways of dealing with predators is prevention. You know, good housing, safe,
right.
As safe as you can make it. And good fencing for the animals.
Yeah, and sometimes plantings. Like we have a lot of plantings where things are moved around and animals, the chickens, can get safe.
Okay, well, you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a conversation with Annie and Jay Warmke. We want to thank you for spending a bit of time with us today. And as your grandmother probably told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and eat your vegetables.
Eat them good. All right, till next time.
Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed. Come and see the morning glory, blossoming.